I'm a chicken fried. A cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio.
Good morning, 7:39 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. I do feel a little offended, PJ, it's not your fault, but that the music John has picked for Representative Petronas is Zac Brown Band and Something Country, which always makes me groove when I hear it, in spite of myself and my views about country music. So whatever, we'll just, you know, move on, live life, and so forth.
Whoa. You don't like country music?
No. Generally. I mean, some of it is fine, but generally, no.
What is your problem? Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, I like to think my problem is I have taste, but, you know.
That you have totally changed my whole opinion of you.
But what about me makes you think I would like country music? I'm a Gen X kid. I grew up with, you know, the new wave and hard rock and punk and, you know. Everything but country.
For a guy that makes a living behind the microphone and going into people's homes and cars via speakers, you would think you would have like an appreciation for all types. Wow.
Yeah.
It's
the one. That one and the other one is jazz. I can't stomach jazz. I can do all kinds of classical, opera even. Can't do jazz. Even worse than I can't do country. But there's some country songs that I like. It's okay.
Okay.
So we can we? I mean, have we reached the rupture in our relationship? Is this it?
We have some repairing to do.
Congressman Petronas is with us now on the phone. Okay, so we are in the shutdown light right now. I mean, access to the base for civilians is restricted, and you know, there's other things that are unfunded. But what things are actually affected, and what's our chance of getting out of this anytime soon?
So this is what we're calling an 80% partial shutdown. So anything that's going to live over in HHS is going to be unfunded right now.
You mean DHS?
So TSA. I'm sorry?
You said HHS. You meant DHS.
That's what I meant. I meant Homeland Security. Yeah. So TSA, Border Protection, FEMA, Coast Guard, U.S. Customs Immigration, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Agency, United States Secret Service. So these are the items that right now they don't have operating capital.
And so, but they're still, I mean, the Coast Guard is still operating. The airlines are still flying. Like everything is still operating. They just aren't funded at the moment, right?
Correct.
So we're going to, rules, I think, is having a vote today. And as long as no Republicans defect, that'll move to the floor. And then you guys can vote on it tomorrow because you're heading up there today, right? Fingers crossed.
Correct. So, there's a chance we do it today. I think it just depends on, you know, the ability for members, everybody to get there. I'm traveling today. It went from 3,000 cancellation flights on Friday or Saturday. Yesterday, there was, I think, about 1,100, you know, anticipating, you know, normal operations today. But, of course, the flights that I'm looking at, they are delayed. So, yeah.
Yeah, I see just a small handful of delays here locally for a couple of hours going to, you know, Charlotte and Atlanta, and Washington is delayed a little bit. But hopefully you get through. Is there any way to make sure that maybe, I don't know, some of the Democrats don't catch their flights? joke.
Yeah, I mean, Mother Nature doesn't pick and choose. So, yeah, it'll affect across the board. But, you know, the we have one less seat of a majority over the Democrats as of later this morning, because another Democratic member of Congress has been elected out of Texas because of a vacant seat that we had. So, I mean, it is what it is. It's going to be a challenge here throughout the rest of the year.
You have a one-person majority, and then you have folks like, what, Thomas Massie, who's, you know, pretty consistently on the fence at best. Anybody else, Republicans who are kind of squishy or at least are problematic because they don't want to vote for something without something? I mean, you know, it can go both ways. It can be that they're not Republican enough or that they're kind of too Republican, right?
Sure. Well, correct. And then we also, Doug LaMaffa, who's an amazing member, a really nice, down-to-earth Republican out of California, died 2 weeks ago, just all of a sudden. So, I mean, we'll have a difficult time bringing some things in for a landing. It's going to be hard to move just everything we want forward just because, you know, we won't get the votes. You've got a handful of Republicans in the Northeast, like typically the ones that are the Salt Caucus. They're just in more of a deep purple seat. There's certain ones in Pennsylvania, and those are going to be the ones that, you know, they're not going to want controversial votes, so they'll err on the side of caution. It's going to make it tough, guys.
Isn't it fascinating, the Salt thing, because you have these fairly well-to-do Republicans in high-tax liberal areas that have long enjoyed the benefit of not having to pay their fair share of federal taxes because of the SALT deduction. And all of a sudden, they're Republicans, except for when it comes to, you know, their own willingness to have the rules apply equally to everybody. So it's which of course puts their elected officials in jeopardy as well. You and I have talked about this before. You'll appreciate this, Jimmy. Andrew doesn't like country music. Well, bless his heart. Thank goodness that Jesus forgives all mistakes. That's great.
I'm still like totally distracted having a conversation with you.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to throw you off. Okay, so midterm elections are coming. Of course, you're up, and everybody in the House is up third of the Senate's up. One of the things that I have been reading a bunch about over the last week or two is the shooting in Minnesota produced responses from President Trump, from Kristi Noem, from Kash Patel, that were absolutely tone deaf and wrong on the Second Amendment and the right to carry. And gun organizations and pro-gun activists have really been frustrated about this. And the concern they have is that the people for whom the Second Amendment is held almost like a religious view are noticing and they're furious. And there's no amount of backtracking at this point that might really work. And if they stay home in November in close districts, maybe a couple of a percent difference puts even more Democrats, which loses us the House. I mean, I see that as a real concern. It's not that they're going to vote Democrat, but if they just don't show up to vote for the Republicans, that's a problem. Are you hearing this, paying attention to this? What do you I mean, I know we're a ways out from the election, but, you know, gun people don't forget real quick.
No, and I hope people just know that the president, look, he means well. There's a lot of things he says when tempers and tensions flare. This is no different. This is the most pro Second Amendment president we've had. I would argue since Reagan. I don't think that his words were meant to infringe on anybody's concerns about constitutional carry or carrying their firearms or using their firearms. But, you know, it's obvious, you know, the instance what happened in Minnesota with this fella were inflamed. He was loaded for bear, and he was, you know, taking, you know, a significant amount of ammunition and firearms right into an agitation situation with law enforcement. I mean, so, you know, would the circumstances be different if he wasn't carrying his firearm? We'll never know. But I think this was just what the president was trying to do unilaterally, to take the temperature down. So.
First of all, I disagree that he was sort of loaded for bear. I mean, he carried two magazines. I carry two magazines all the time. That's just a normal, you know, personal carry. But I do agree with you. What's that?
Thank you.
Oh, your son. Okay. No, but I do agree with you. Trump has been very, very pro-gun generally. I think some people have a distaste for the bump stock stuff, but of course he's gotten rid of the $200 tax on suppressors, which they're flying off the shelves right now exactly because of that. One of the things I was thinking about this the other day, Trump is, he doesn't speak the language of ideology. He's not ideological. He's pure pragmatism. And so he will go ahead.
No, you know, he is, and it's like, you know, there are bills being filed like right now in the Florida legislature. I think Toby Oberdorf is running a bill to fix, you know, so bump stocks are legal again. So there's a number of things out there that are still being done at the state level to go out there and make sure that those that are pro Second Amendment or passionate about guns rights and firearms rights are still having a seat at the table. So, you know, this is, again, I think this is a spike in the goat and the president's word usage simply because of the circumstances of the day.
I think what it does, it's kind of like when he made the comments about DeSantis and abortion, that's too low of a threshold or too high of a threshold, however you want to view it. It's for people who are ideologically committed, he does not speak that language, and so he doesn't know when he missteps on those things. It's just that usually when it comes to policy, it shakes out the right way. But I agree with you that, you know, we tend to sometimes almost care too much about what President Trump says instead of watching more what actually gets done, which is, you know, obviously much better.
1,000%. I mean, you nailed it on the head. I mean, remember, this guy's in the hospitality business. He might as well be a manager of a restaurant trying to make customers happy. You know, sometimes you're just going to say whatever you need to say to take the temperature down. But ultimately, you're going to make sure that everybody else in the room is still having a good time and they come back and eat. You got to make a living. This is no different. I mean, he's just trying to take the temperature down and set circumstances. And next week, he'll do something very pro-gun that'll be over the top. That'll, you know, make, you know, the pro-Second Amendment folks, you know, rabid with jubilation at the expense of those that, you know, hate firearms.
I'm gonna ask you kind of an odd question, but I kind of want to hear your thoughts about it. Obamacare or the marketplace has income-based subsidies, which are changing, right? I mean, that's part of the screaming that's been the government shut down one and has not really been resolved in this one, except that they're not going to exist. And so some people are going to not be able to afford Obamacare that thought they were going to. But why do we have income-based subsidies for Obamacare and not income-based subsidies for employer-based health insurance?
I think we should have income-based across the board for any type of benefit of any federal tax dollar that's going to be in any program. I obsess over the amount of money that we spend, whether it be at a state level or at a federal level, that comes back to the states with almost zero checks and balances that becomes fungible because we don't have the ability to ensure every one of those dollars is being used for its intended program use.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could take that question and apply it across the board to so many, you know, expenditures that we do every day. I mean, because it's all taxpayers' money. This is money that you could be using for your own purposes, you know, but the federal government has an insatiable, you know, appetite for spending money.
Yeah, you and I actually had a really interesting conversation a couple of weeks ago when we were just chatting before the interview. We never did manage to talk about it on the air, but as the former CFO of the state of Florida, you have some really interesting ideas, I thought, about how federal funding should work in terms of, you know, siloed money or, you know, earmarked money in a good way, sunset provisions, all of that, clawbacks. Can you maybe just, I don't know, spend a minute or two and talk about that? I don't know that you're necessarily in a position to get it all done, but I thought it was a really interesting perspective, again, as a former CFO.
Well, I mean, I just kind of think we should really revisit what the true purpose of state tax dollars are federal tax dollars. And with federal, you know, I can drill down into those particular. I mean, I feel like, you know, absolutely federal government dollars should be used in ensuring our, you know, our military, you know, our Medicare, our safety net is in place. But sometimes you get states that will, you know, have a program that is developed by the federal government, and then it'll get an expansion to it. And then, unfortunately, you take place of what happened in COVID, massive expansion of all these programs. None of them were reeled back in now that we're in a post-COVID era because, you know, it seems like nobody has the stomach to want to try to bring these programs back to where it's a reasonable set of benefits to allow somebody to enjoy, you know, or get the stability to move their life forward. But then when you see what's happened in Minnesota and billions of dollars that have been spent unaccounted for, my attitude is, wait, stop sending, when you've got a flare like that, the federal government should have the ability to stop sending money and enforce those members of Congress there. But it's such a great program, let them go file a direct appropriation saying, you know what, this is our program, this is our encounter data, this is the good we did with it. Can we please have this money? And then let the members of Congress vote up and down on it. I'm sorry, I hate the way we spend money in Washington because this is something we're leaving to our kids. It's massive amounts of debt.
You know, the original idea, as I understand it from the founders, was that, you know, one person would come forward with a spending request and 400 people would vote him down, or 200 or whatever at the time. And then somebody else would come forward with a spending request to take money and do something, and the other 200 would vote them down. And it would just, everybody would collectively vote no so often that nothing would get passed and spending would stay in control. Whereas now it's all, I'll vote yes if you vote yes, if he votes yes, if she votes yes. And so all these things get passed. I'm with you. I mean, each funding bill could be targeted, specific, with metrics, with sunset provisions, with a yes, up or down vote on this particular one. And then let's do the next one. Let's do the next one instead of these massive, multi-pronged spending approaches that, you know, everybody feels they have to vote yay or nay on. And then they get politically attacked for voting no on something that was tucked into a bunch of other, you know, just it's crazy the way we do it.
Well, and we tried, look, we did 12 individual budgeted bills. We did exactly what we're supposed to do. Then we came back as opposed to doing a massive CR or one big massive, we did what are called, instead of omnibuses, we did what mini buses. There were, you know, like three appropriations bills together. And we're getting to a better place. It's just going to be that much harder now because of our voting situation.
Most definitely. Jimmy Patronis, he is our congressman for District 1. Safe travel, say. Hope your airline travel is not impeded or not impeded very much. You get up there safely and, you know, don't get too taken advantage of by it and all the weather and the D.C. of it all. You know, you have to clean yourself off a little bit when you come home. Jimmy, thank you as always for the time. Go ahead.
And I want to remind people, if you haven't made a trip to D.C., you need to make it. You need to let our office know. You need to let us show you a good time. Washington, D.C. is still one of the most incredible, magnificent cities in this whole entire world, and you deserve to come and see your city.
Oh, it is. I totally agree with you. And when, you know, Trump gets done building the arch, I think it'll be, or the arc, it'll be even that much better. I completely agree. Everybody ought to go to D.C. at least once in their adult lives so they can experience it. Jimmy, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Thanks, buddy.